Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name's John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. Episode 9 with Joel Cachel. This episode, Joel embarks on his Dirty 30 tour. He leaves Minnesota and heads all the way down to Key West, Florida. He stops at our house during this tour to record a couple songs and to record this podcast. During this episode, we spoke about touring the country, travel in Europe, labels being a funny thing, reaching out to your audience, the difference between playing abroad and in the States, and how to adapt to technology and the social cycle. This episode was recorded at my house, so during the first 15 minutes, you can hear my little one yapping in the background. I do apologize for this, but this episode was too good to discard, so I hope you enjoy episode 9 with Joel Cachel. Buddy, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name is John Samuel, and today I'm joined in the studio with Joel Cachel.
Yes,
that's welcome, right. Joel.
Hey, thank you.
For those of you at home listening, it only took me 20 takes to get that name correct.
That's pretty good.
And meanwhile, my wife was giving me static about that. Anyways, welcome to the show, Joel. It is a pleasure to have you back in town, and it's more of a pleasure to have you playing for us while you're in town, because you bring such a great energy and great vibe, and it kind of refreshes this area. How's everything going?
It's been an amazing tour so far. It really is. We've been traveling a lot and just got to experience a lot of this part of the country so far, and it's so nice and refreshing to be in familiar areas but also new areas. I think that's the kind of the learning part of starting out as an independent artist, is learning how to map out your way across the country. So
this is now the last time you were here was 2 years ago.
Yep.
And you did the same tour, correct?
Yeah, but so in the past I would just fly into Florida and then rent a vehicle. And, you know, one of my biggest expenses on the road is always a rental vehicle, or a vehicle to put your stuff in, to sleep in, whatever. And so this time I expanded the tour. This is my Dirty 30 tour is what I'm calling it. I turned 30 at the end of it. So this time we started in Minnesota. We did Nashville. We did Greenville, South Carolina. We were in Greensboro, North Carolina, and then we headed out to New Bern, awesome place. Love my New Bern out there. Shout out to my buddies out there, Jason. And then we headed down the coast. It's pretty much hanging on the beach every day.
Now, are you doing all cover gigs on this show, or have you guys popped in and done any original tunes?
My typical shows, I do a lot of original music as well. At one point in recently in my career, and part of this tour is trying to get back into doing, I have tons of original music, but trying to get back into focusing on that part of my career. I really do enjoy playing cover songs as well. You know, I think it's fun to entertain people. And I always say, when I walk into a bar and I hear someone play a song I love, I'm like, I love this song, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, how can you rob someone from hearing a song that's, you know, in their mind or is kind of a classic or something that takes them to a certain place? And, for me, it's, so I do enjoy that. I always try to, and when I do cover songs, as an artist, I just naturally kind of change it myself. It's not because I'm trying to do it differently and be different. It's just because that's my interpretation of the song. If I had to spend all day to try to play it the way someone wrote it, you know, then that's not going to happen. So in a way, they're all kind of original. But I think I'm a talented songwriter. I really I grew up.
I can vouch for you. Yes, you are a very talented songwriter.
And I'm not trying to say that to like be like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm the God's gift to earth or whatever. But
it's good to have confidence. There's nothing wrong with that.
To me, you know, I can write a song every single day, but it's not going to be a good song. You know, like, but when good songs hit you, you know it. Some write themselves in a year. Some write themselves in 5 minutes. You know, so I think that it's, you know, when you are a songwriter, you kind of learn about you and who you are, and the songs kind of come to you, like, you don't go to them.
Take me through your songwriting process.
You know,
when something hits you, take me through that process.
Oh, I remember a song on my, this is just one that kind of sticks out in my mind, just an example of how it can be come from nowhere. I was hanging out, ready to go to sleep. I worked a 12-hour day that day when I used to do landscaping every day for a bit, my business, and I ended up just sleeping, and my lights were out. I'm ready to go to bed, and this song is like, I had this melody in my head. I had this song in my head. It's called Romeo and Juliet, and I was like, Joel, you need to get up right now. You need to write this down, because, you know, so I turned on the light. I was like, exhausted, and I wrote down this song. And for the next, like, 5 hours, I couldn't sleep because I just had to keep playing it. And my mom, I remember my mom was working late that night, and she had come home. And I'm like, Mom, I got to play this song for you, you know. And it was just, it's kind of cool to have something. The song is just, it's just an obvious, it just makes sense. And when stuff makes sense, you just got to, you got to go with that flow. But I guess every song, you know, for me as a songwriter, it always does change a little bit too, though. You know, sometimes I'll have chords that I'm playing with for a while. A lot of my songs are just freestyles that I did. I just picked up the guitar and had some chords, and I just started singing. And
are you able to remember those freestyle lyrics when you're doing something like that?
I always just hit record on my phone.
Okay.
So I'm like, when I'm feeling inspired by it, I'm like, I need to capture this. And actually, a lot of my songs I write when I'm driving down the road. You know, a lot of times when I do, I'm on the road. I really like to listen to silence. You know, it's funny as someone that's so in the music, you know, I really don't listen to a lot of music. I just kind of listen and experience what's going on around me in life. Or if I do, it's like I'm listening to the radio. And sometimes I think that, you know, people can look at that and be like, well, you need to expand your mind. And I agree. I can always listen to more music. You know, I've been on the road with my friend.
No, if I could interject, I think it's important to have to unplug, and not just. It's really important, and a lot of us. I try to do it as much as I can, and I probably don't do it as nearly much as I need to. Tough. But I think to just sit back, unplug from TV, from radio, from noise, and I think that's where the creative process is really.
It's my meditation state is when I'm on the road and I'm listening to the noise of the road going, me driving on the road. You get into deep thought, and it, and a lot of times I listen, if I am listening to the radio, I hear this song or this vibe and I just start singing to something, maybe not exactly what a melody is that's in the song because I'm trying to write something different, but kind of capture that, the essence of what people have done that is successful. You know, no reason I listen. I'm not saying that radio is defines success because there's obviously a lot of successful people out there. But, you know, I try to write something that, you know, kind of falls in that a mainstream popular pocket. You know, I'm obviously have a sound and a style that reflects me as Joel Cachel, but at the same time, you know, I don't know. You know, I would love to have my music played, getting royalties on it. You know, radio station. You know, like if not to say to sell out. I don't know if that's even I think it's a overrated or overused term. You know, selling out. So you're meshing with different businesses to help become successful.
I completely disagree with that, because if you think about the creating process, so there's a scientific explanation that. When a scientist releases something, it is going to be an average release, and that it and that this average release could either be a masterpiece or could be average. Mm-hmm. But there is no difference between another person releasing that same piece of work and whether that piece will become a masterpiece or an art or just, you know, just okay. an average
That's
piece
a,
of work. So
point.
The thing, the creative process is that the more you create, mm-hmm. the better opportunity you have at releasing something that may go there. And I don't, I disagree with how artists label, like certain artists are very particular. Like I can only release music on this form or this outlet, yep. or I only want to release work pertaining to what I love and what I would do. But I think the more you create, the more diverse you become. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with licensing your music to commercials. I think if, like, you, for example, you get your song on AT&T and you license to AT&T, I think that income from AT&T and licensing your song is only going to give you more ability yep. to do what Absolutely. You actually love to do.
And I guess that was kind of what, I don't know if that, it kind of defines what I was explaining is opportunity. You know, when you have opportunities to work with different people, to build the relationships, you know, along the way. Because I think what you're also adding to is the idea that when you have those opportunities to license music or get some funds to continue your journey, your life journey of music and how you can use your creativity and you know, at this point, you know, I'm not saying that I've been... Labels are a funny thing, you know. Like I just feel like, you know,
well,
people are like,
oh, do you want to label signed? Everyone?
Yeah. What? No, and I'm saying labels, you know, record labels too. You know,
yeah.
like as far as people, you know, do you do it independently? Like some people have been very successful at, you know, and they've had a career that they're able to set up their own business and hire everyone under them.
I really think it depends on what exactly you're looking for.
Yeah.
But if you want to get your original music out there, you want to make a good income doing it. I don't see why you can't do it independently now. What I think it boils down to is marketing.
Yep.
That's what I really think it boils down to is and networking.
That'd
like what we were talking about
yeah.
prior to the podcast, how networking is so important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, one thing that I've learned is just when I'm on the road is the people that you talk to, you know, the friends that you do make. And I think it's so cool to just be on the road and being hanging out with you and your family and... you know,
so,
I saw you 2 years ago, and it's great to be here again. So
yeah, Joel stopped by 2 years ago, and we were able to record a song in my backyard and hang out, and it was our first time we got to meet him, and it was a great experience. And we try to have a lot of artists over and get to know him, because the more I hear about what's going on and about life on the road, the better we can grow as a business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the more we could start benefiting our venues and our musicians. What we talked about this briefly the other day. So how'd you come across the Blueberry Patch?
A friend of mine, his name is L Dub, or his name's Lee Walsh. He goes
Which
by,
we work with.
Yep, his artist name is L Dub, and I realize it's L Dub because his name is Lee, L, and then double E.
You know, I don't think I'd have any problems pronouncing that name either.
Yeah, that's an easier one, yeah.
I didn't know you were friends with him.
Yeah, he's from Minnesota originally, and I met him last year when I was on tour in Key West. And I went up to and said hi to him, and before I ever heard him play, and he's got a great style. And a funny story is that my drummer, Garrett Kolb, whom I'm on the road with, he also plays another band called Thomas and the Shakes, and... Mark Walsh, L-Dub's uncle, plays saxophone with them in their band. So it's just kind of And actually, he told me they're actually not uncles, they're cousins. He's like, yeah, I've been calling him uncle my whole life. But he's like, actually, they're cousins. I just kind of followed him on the road and just kind of watch what he does. And so this time around, he was just in Costa Rica, so we made a point to go and check him out. The Blueberry Patch, I just saw he was playing there. Really cool place, extremely creative atmosphere. And, you know, everyone just goes there and it's just, God puts out such great vibes. You can go there and hang out and bring your cooler and, support artists. They do it. They've had it since the 70s, and the original owner, Dallas, started it. And they do it the 1st, the 7th, the 11th, and the 22nd of every month.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what day
that falls on.
Yeah,
that's when they're
Tuesday,
doing
Wednesday,
it.
Wednesday, Thursday, just those are the days they do
it. I'm really ashamed to say that I have never checked it out. Yeah. And we live so close by.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that we have had on the list.
Yeah.
We just need to get out and do it.
Yeah, you should. There's another awesome place that we stumbled upon. So when I'm on the road, I'm constantly trying to play shows. But every night that I don't play shows, I'm going to open mics. I'm trying to surround myself with like-minded people.
Awesome.
People that are going to understand what you do. I'm so inspired when I'm on the road. You know, when I... we stumbled on this place called Allwindaugh Green. It's right out north of Charleston. Same vibe as Blueberry Patch, a little bit bigger setup. But just lawn chairs, bonfires, trumpets hanging from the trees. You know, like, it's just super artistic. And they have... Every Wednesday, they had 5 bands from all over the country that were there at that time. And we weren't even supposed to play. But I contacted the guy, and he pretty much just slid us in for 3 songs while one of the bands was setting up. And there's something to say about that. They're so gracious. They're so kind with the way that they just allowed you to, you know, okay, go grab a beer in the green room and hang out. You know, it was like, it's organized, but it's just kind of, you know, made everyone feel comfortable. Same with the Blueberry Patch.
It's got that family atmosphere. So for all the bands that have either been playing together for a while or up and coming artists, can you hit and really touch on why it's so important to get out on the road and get out of town? Because I think this is what I really want out of this podcast is I want to be able to, if I can educate one person, if I can get them thinking differently on some aspect of the music business,
yeah,
or if I can learn something different, mm-hmm, to better my company. And I think it's a great opportunity for, especially because you've played so many places. You've played Alaska, you've played Ireland, you've come to the east coast of the country and play. You play out in Colorado, which we booked you out, and you play in Minnesota. So you're all over the map. Why is it so important to get on the road and get out of town?
Well, if you play the same place every single week, people are like, oh, we can catch them next week. You know, that's a huge thing for me, is that if I can spend a week in Minnesota, a week in Colorado, and then go up to Alaska for a couple of weeks, and then come back to Colorado, and, you know, you're gone. You know, you're not just something that is readily available to everybody.
You're not oversaturating your market.
Yeah, your environment. Exactly. You're not oversaturating your market, and I think that is the and it's just not inspiring to yourself. You know, like, when you're on the road and you get to see all these amazing places, you get to feel alive from the experiences themselves. It makes you want to write music. It makes you want to establish new relationships, and you have to be open to those constantly. And I don't know. We were kind of talking earlier, and I think that when you play the same place over and over and over, you're just like, it just seems like another gig. You know, like when I'm on the road and I try to take my practice of learning, watching some other people live, you know, just how they engage with people and get, you know, trying to reach out to your audience. That's some of the hardest things to do, you know, especially
that's extremely hard
when you're in a dead crowd, or not even dead crowd. Maybe they are actually, usually people are listening, But people don't, some of the places that I play, they aren't necessarily venues at this time that it's a listening room. They're there to go have a good time and talk to their family and friends. And, you know, it's like everyone's on their own agenda too. You know, I'm up here playing music because that's my agenda, you know, but when you start trying to like high five the front row, you know, or, you know, you're able to engage a little more. And that's something I'm constantly trying to practice on, you know, but, I think the experience, you know, when I went to Europe, I've gone twice now, and you know, it's no one's booking it for me. It's all independent, but it's
now. That's what I wanted to ask you. Did you go over to Europe specifically to play, or were you there to travel?
I would say it's both.
Okay,
but for me, it's
and you had no gigs booked prior to going over there.
No, I would always set up gigs before I went there.
Oh, okay.
But at this point in time, in me touring Europe, it wasn't I'm selling out big shows or anything like that. It's more of what I like to call research and development. You know, I would say you have to play your first show in Ireland to play your second show. You know, how are you supposed to start if you don't take that leap of faith? And to me, that's the most important thing. When an opportunity opens or a door opens, someone says, hey, we want you, you know, you music could do really good over in Europe. My producer, David Becker, for my Pocket Change album, he used to live in Wuppertal, Germany. And so he was like, hey, your music I think would do really good over in Europe. You know, I can help you book a show or two. And so that was like, okay, that's my next plan. And for me, you got to follow, you know, I'm a believer in divine intervention and the fact that we're on a path and everyone meets for reasons. There's no accidents. And so that's what it gave me. It gave me the opportunity to meet some amazing people over there and start some friendships that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. And I think it's the second time around was to visit friends and to play music. And yeah, it's a great experience.
How do you compare the crowd abroad to back home? What's the difference playing for, you know, I know you played a lot of gigs in Ireland.
Yep.
I was following you pretty closely, and I got to see the cool pictures.
Yep. And some of them, they were booked last minute. You know, like sometimes you have to go into a place and talk to them, you know, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do, you know, because it's hard to sometimes make those relationships when you are overseas, you know, and trying to send music, sending emails. But the crowds are great. I love the Irish culture there. They're such a fun and full of love, you know, and hate, you know, but it's a love hate, you know, like you kind of tease your friends, you know, just, but it's all in love, you know, it's that kind of tough love stuff. And, it was fun. You know, I think whenever you're playing, you know, in an environment that's a little bit different, it's kind of a breath of fresh air, you know, like it's something a little bit different than what they're used to. Like when I also go to Nashville, you know, it's a very high culture for country music. And it's just a big songwriting, you know, capital, obviously. But, you know, my music's more like acoustic pop rock, kind of beachy feel-good live music. And I think that it just kind of sounds different. You know, it's a little bit of a change from what they're, you know, it's like we were talking about when you play the same show, it just kind of, it all feels the same. But when you hear all the same style of music, something a little bit different kind of helps it break it up a little bit.
Do you cater your set list to when you're out on the road, do you cater your set list to specific venues? Do you switch it up depending on the vibe or the atmosphere or the ambiance of a venue?
Not necessarily at this point. You know, I really just enjoy playing music, and the ability to make enough money to continue to travel is kind of the key to me. Because I think, like I said before, this is a life journey that you get to do as a musician, and you work harder every day, you know, like, what is the measure of success, you know? Well, are you happy?
That's all within, yeah.
Yeah, oh yes, I'm completely successful, you know, like when people ask that question, like you, for right now, I believe in what I do. Right now, I get to make enough money to do what I do, and who cares? I mean, I always say I'm not rich in money, but rich in life experience. You know, like if you have that ability to be happy with what you do and what you... But as far as venues go, it's people. I do cater a little bit, but more on the location. It's like, I don't go to Nashville a ton. I don't, you know, I've done LA a few times, but to me, it's building a career where I want to be. I love Alaska. I love Colorado. I love being in Florida when it's cold in Minnesota. I get to go down to Key West and hang out on the beach and play music and play shows and then go spend my 30th birthday in New Orleans. And when I went to Ireland last year, it was before my 29th birthday. So a lot of it's just the excuse to get to travel. You know, like, it's like, oh, mom, dad, I got to go back to Europe for a business trip. You know, like, to me, it is business, you know, and I look at it as a business. I think it's important to, if you're trying to do it for your living, because sooner or later, you know, you may or may not get audited, you know, knock on wood that you don't. But, you know, for me, it's like trying to set it up. And when I'm over in Europe, they're business expenses. I'm over there for research and development for my business. You know, you could just say that's something you say for to write stuff off, but in all reality, that is what it's up for. My heart is pure when I say that I'm over there for business. Yeah, to travel too. I enjoy traveling, but that's part of my career is you have to travel. You know, go to, and if you make hubs in different places, these are places you can go for the rest of your life. You know, you just have to start building it more than anything. So
that's why I started, one of the reasons I started this podcast, because, you know, with the family and two small kids right now, sitting down, my conversations that I'm holding with people in the industry are my travels right now. Mm-hmm. That's
awesome.
That's as close as I can get to travels. It's different than when you're communicating over the phone or by email, and I'm actually hanging out, sitting down, getting to know people more on a personal level and networking.
And how long have you been doing this podcast again?
I just started. This is episode 9 right now.
Awesome. Very cool.
And so it's going on for about 6 or 7 months, something like that. And I plan on keeping going and interviewing.
How's it going? You were mentioning that you had one of the podcasts before. You were talking to
talking to an entertainment lawyer. Awesome. I'm sorry, folks. He's not an entertainment lawyer. He just got past the bar, and he's working for the city of Tampa. But this guy also plays in 2 projects. He plays. So what's the really interesting take? And I can't wait to re-listen to the episode and write my notes down and get this up episode. Yeah. Up and posted. But what's interesting is this guy plays with 2 different projects. He plays with like a rock fusion band, and then he plays with a folkgrass band. And then he's also during the day, he's a lawyer. So he's torn between both sides. He's got the business side and the legal side, but then he's got the creative and the art side, which don't always intertwine. Mm-hmm. So he had some interesting takes, and I'll get that up and loaded. Back to your travels. What's in make? I mean, what's in the making? Where are you planning on heading after the Dirty 30 tour? Because I know you're thinking about it.
Yeah. No. My website's jkmusic.com, and if anyone that listens to this wants to check it out, I pretty much book probably most of my summer booked out right now. I'll be doing a lot of the Minnesota, Wisconsin area. That's where my home is. And I do Colorado. I'll be doing Colorado. I try to do Colorado once a month. I try to do Alaska 3 times a year if I can. This year, I'll probably just be 2 times. I always go, I try to do April sometime in the summer, and then I'll go on, October. So I've been going October for about 7 years, and consistency is important too. You know, like, people are just like, oh, Joel Cacho's going to be back. It's October. Let's see where he's going to be playing. So, but that's kind of the agenda. One of the coolest things I get to do this year is go up. I was invited to go to a fishing camp. I got invited to go play guitar around the fire.
And how cool is that?
Yeah, I get to go to Alaska, and I'm pretty much taken care of all the way around.
So you guys will be salmon fishing?
I'll be out fishing. Yep, every day, and then that's at awesome. Night I get to sit around the fire and play music.
You know, you touched on something that's very important, and that's consistency. One of the bands that we are working with out of Orlando just started going on runs. And they're going up to Jacksonville one weekend, then they're going to St. Augustine one weekend, then they're going up to Savannah one weekend. But they're strictly doing all originals. They're not doing any cover gigs anymore. One of the things that they talked to me about, and one of their selling points with venues, is building a relationship with these venues. And by doing that, you may go to Jacksonville and you may not have any fan base in Jacksonville. But if you talk to these venues and you work together, then you can create a fan base. And by doing that is, if you went to some random venue in Jacksonville and said, hey, look, we plan on coming back to Jacksonville twice a year or three times a year.
Yep.
And I know we've never played here, and I know we'll probably have nothing but five people to bring in tonight. But let's work on the pay scale. We'll start off with $50. Next time we come back, you know, we'll bring our fan base will be stronger. It will be bigger. And I think it's important that we progress and learn how to start communicating with venue owners. And that's
huge.
By sitting down and talking with them and trying to actually build the music program up instead of having the normal conversation. Well, how many people are you going to bring? Or what can you do for me? Well, what can we both do to grow as together?
No, I think that you hit it on the, you're right on the spot. Like, I think that with, you know, and that's something that when we were booking this tour, you know, you put in the email, you know, say, hey, you know, I know this is, you said this is my first time playing here, but this isn't just going to be like my one time I come through here. I'm planning on developing a local fan base. We had a gig last night that we're going to play. And most of my gigs I try to get are just a guarantee. You know, I'm trying to just get paid at this point. You know, it's hard to do a gig with a door cover if you don't really have that following, you know, at that point. And these people didn't think we were going to bring any people. You know, I tend to be great at calling people and being more of a phone person than I am do the Facebook thing. Like, we're talking about unplugging, you know, like, I hate looking at my screen, you know, like. I had a crew of people that were going to come out and hang out. And they decided that it wasn't going to be a good show. And, you know, luckily we got to hang out on the beach instead all day and play on the beach and met people that, you know, it was so much more engaging. I had so much fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you, are you busking anywhere? Like, have you done that in a while?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I haven't on this tour. You know,
you did do that in Ireland, though, correct? What was the feedback you got from that?
You know, I remember the very first time I tried to busk was in Chicago. I went to the train station, and I was too nervous. Like, it's weird to break that silence. It's awkward to break that silence and start singing, you know? And, like, so I went in. I actually never even busked because that was a plan. So when I was in Ireland this last time, I said, Joel, you can't be afraid. You know, like, you got to just do this.
Just go.
I thought about going to the bar and getting a drink or something, like, to take the edge off. I said, you don't need that, you know, like. So I went out there and I bussed. A lot of people in Galway is a great busking place. There's a walking road where there's someone like every 500 feet, you know. And I sang my heart out. Like, I sang so loud, you know. Most people have amps, and I'm just sitting there losing my voice, just trying to busk and dancing around, having fun. And, you know, I was making enough money every day to have a hostel, have food. And honestly, there's a lot of great information on the web about, you can travel all across Europe busking. You know, there's places that you, especially if you're good, you know, if there's talent there too, you know, I wish when you see people, bums on the side of the road, asking for change, if they just had a guitar, that they're walking by cars and singing someone's songs, you know. I don't know, it's kind of funny, but.
Did you ever hear about Amanda Palmer, the musician?
Yes, I think.
She was the one who was on Kickstarter. Okay, she first got on Kickstarter, and she was able to raise $1 million on Kickstarter for her album.
She just followed It was something she followed up. I think she was on The Voice or something like
yeah.
that, right?
No, I don't know if she American did Idol. The Voice or not. But what I read her book, and it's her book's phenomenal. The way she started before, she was always a musician. But one of the things she did was she was out on the street, and she was dressed up as, I believe it was the Statue of Liberty. And she was in Boston.
That's hilarious.
And she stood on this milk crate and on a busy street. And she handed people, she went down in a mechanical movement, like spray painted tin as the Statue of Liberty. And she handed people a flower. But in her book, and she also does a TED Talk. And in her TED Talk and in the book, she talks about the connection she was able to make with people when they were on the street.
When you feel good, like the ability to meet a complete stranger and hold a conversation.
And even in even without exchanging words. So, for example, if you're out on the middle of the street and you're just playing your heart out and you're in the middle of a song and I connect with you, we may never exchange another word.
Yeah.
But there was a connection made. And that's what's so powerful about her whole experience. And that is how she was able to raise $1 million on Kickstarter, because she took the experience of being a street artist, standing on a milk crate, handing people flowers, and she took that experience and she transferred it into her music career. And what she did that was so powerful to make her raise $1 million on her Kickstarter was that she connected with people. This was the type of, when she went on tour, she'd be in the middle of nowhere, North Dakota, and she'd get on Facebook and she said, "I'm stuck in a hotel with no tampons." And 10 minutes later, a fan would knock on the door and brought her a box of tampons. And she was just amazed. But what she did that other musicians don't do was she always engaged. No matter what the circumstance was, no matter what the situation, if she posted something on Facebook or posted on something on Twitter and a fan replied or commented on that, she'd always take the time to engage with that fan and keep the conversation alive and get to know that person. Of course, it'd be impossible to meet everyone, but that's how she was able to transfer her story in a Kickstarter and become such a successful musician was because she connected with her audience and she learned that from being a street artist. So I think it's very humbling.
Yeah, it is. It's tough to, you know, sometimes
I could only imagine,
you know, I don't know. I think that when I've learned from being certain shows I've played, or when you feel that nervousness, you got to use it as fuel. You know, if when you're a little, you know, for me, sometimes I get anxious. I get nervous before I go and play shows. And that the ability to take that as food for the soul, and because it may, I don't know, that's what makes you feel alive, right? You know, is that the energies that you get of when you, something that maybe makes you uncomfortable, but you're like, hey, this isn't, just do it anyways.
If you don't get uncomfortable, I don't think you ever grow.
Yeah.
And there's a saying that I picked up from my Toastmasters class that I hear a lot of people repeat all the time. A comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there. And if that's what we were talking about earlier. If you're stuck playing the same four bars every week, four times a month.
Yep.
Playing at the same locations, you're not growing. You're not doing. When you force yourself to get out of your zone and make yourself, I mean, this podcast was a stretch for me. I'm used to talking to people, but it's on different terms. I'm used to being behind the bar.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. I when you're behind the bar, you could say whatever you want to say because you controlled alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. You're the party guy.
Yeah, you're the man. You know, if they want their alcohol, you are the man to go to. So when I first started this, I was like, you know, I had second thoughts. My first guest, I was like, am I gonna?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not Larry King. I don't know anything about interviewing, but fuck it. You just got to. Sometimes you just have to step outside your box and
No, I agree. I think it's fun to sit here and chat about it because it is, you know, the conversation can go anywhere. You know, like, you know, obviously we have some kind of structure outline that we want to talk about, but and how often do people just get to hang on and talk like for an hour straight, you know, about, you know, something that is documented too.
It's something nice to that remember. Something that both parties love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I always try to keep it positive because there's so much negatives in this music industry, and the music industry is just cutthroat. But and I can't tell you how many conversations I've had over the years, and I've actually had to separate myself from certain musicians because every time I talk to them, the negativity is just there, and it's like talking in a circle. You're talking about the same problem, same situation, and you know, it's just a giant loop.
Yeah.
It's almost like one of my guests explained the social cycle. You go to Facebook first. And you go to Twitter, and you go to Instagram, and then like 15 minutes later, you repeat them all, and you're going back in that circle, and you get caught up in that circle, and you get caught up by what you're hearing, what you're seeing.
Yeah, I could talk about putting down your phone all day. Like I remember being in when I first was living in Loveland, Colorado. I went down to this bar called The Cove, and it's just the little last bar open. I went met my neighbor that night. And said, "Hey, want to go get a beer? You know, whatever." And there's a small TV on. It wasn't even a phone. It's just a small little miniature TV. And there's all these people crashing. You know, it's all these blooper stuff, super funny stuff. Well, I was talking to this older lady next to me, and we were talking. And then she just saw me get so distracted because something funny happened on the TV. And she went to the bartender. She said, "Would you turn that damn thing off?" And like, it's amazing. The whole bar. You just saw just light up with conversation. The fact that there wasn't, that's why a lot of the music industries, I mean, technology is a good thing and it's a bad thing, you know?
Oh, definitely.
People used to go out to bars and music was the screen. You know,
and we've touched base on that in many episodes is that there's too many attention getters.
Yeah.
You got 60 TVs.
And it is the world we live in though, you know, you do have to adapt, you know, and that's the thing is you do have to adapt, but it's like, there's no, like people would dance, you know, when there's music, like people wouldn't go out to see this sick band tonight, you know, like, are you going to come? And that was the entertainment, you know, now it's like people get uncomfortable. So they look at their phone, they look at their Facebook because they're trying to, everyone wants to.
All right. So what's your idea on getting people excited about the music again? Whether it be your music or whether it be your friend's band or band that you're just in love with. What do you think we can do as talent buyers, as venue owners, as fans? Give me some suggestions. What do you think? Anything off the top of your head that we can get people involved in the music again?
You know, I think it's people's choice either way, but you know, I think in a world like, you know, everyone, no, unless it's a strictly music venue, it's not just a bar, they're not going to not have a TV in it. Because they also want to get their sports fans out and that stuff. But maybe turn off, if you have live music, you know, have one or the other or something like that. But one thing as a musician, I think it's really cool doing individual releases, you know, do a music video for every song or something. And that's, now I'm going back and like kind of contradicting myself here because it is a visual world though. You know, that's the hardest thing is because it's like if, you can release a song, but if you release a song with a video, you're more likely for people to visually watch it. So, but I guess I'm saying for more live industry, or live shows. And as far as, you know, ideas past that, it's,
well, you know, back in the day, the Grateful Dead encouraged all their fans to come up and they set out a taping section for the band. Where, you know, you look at these old school photos and to the stage left would be a whole section set up of fans. And they had these long sticks holding up on them with the tape recorders taped onto the stick. And they were recording the actual shows. And what they used to do is trade tapes. Dave Matthews was able to do that a lot. When Dave Matthews' band first started out, his fans traded tapes. So before Dave Matthews even hit the road, they would go into, hypothetically, I think I'm correct, some town in Alabama, and they had never been in Alabama before, and they were brand new band, and they show up to Alabama and they sell out the venue. And the reason being is because everyone had tapes of that show, and they heard what they were doing in Virginia, and they were excited about the music. We live in a world where we need to be utilizing, we need to be utilizing and getting people excited about music. And I don't know if it would be good video record or just record the audio and send it to our friends who live out of state. Maybe that's something we need to start doing. Get excited. Hey, man, because how often do your friends share music with you? Does that happen anymore?
You know, I think it does. And I think it's, you know, I feel like I'm a little kind of old school on everything in life. I think people, you know, you're saying like share mixtapes. I used to be like, hey, I made this CD for you. You know, like everything's so digital. Like, but I know Spotify, you can listen to, you know, other people's, you know, playlists and stuff like that. And, but I guess it's really different for me to say, cause I am so old school. Like I think that if you sent out an actual postcard or like a newsletter instead of like, I'm about the personal touch, you know, like coming in and seeing people, you know, I know that I should be more engaged with the online presence, but for me, it's, you know, if you sent out like a thank you letter or, you know, even to venues, and maybe they look at it, maybe they don't, maybe it's just because I am so old school, but I think that's a lost art. I think that's something that, and maybe that's why I need to have more, you know, people, I need people to constantly do that too. You know, like obviously that's a huge part of this industry, but I think that you're kind of saying about Amanda Palmer, was it? You know, her ability to engage with people, her ability to have that personal touch where everyone, you know, felt like they were special as they should. You know, like people, everyone wants to create, and I want to create friendships that are going to last for a lifetime. You know, the ability to wholeheartedly, you know, fall in love with everybody, you know. Why just, I don't know, just kind of.
I get you. I get what you're saying. And it's connecting on a more of an organic level. And it's done with passion. It's done with sincerity. It's not done where, like, I'm not looking to get anything. Hang out with you today and talk about the music business. I'm not looking to get anything out of it, you know?
No, I agree. It's just kind of food for thought, you know, and kind of pushing back and forth. And, I don't even know what the last tangent was that we were on. this tour has been so fun and just been able to, kind of travel on. It's been a lot of good sunshine.
That's awesome.
You know, so.
And so for those listening, we are going to actually film a video after we get some launch here. And I'm hoping Joel will play one of my favorite songs off his album, H2O.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. The H2O song, I love it. It's about water and our environment and just as far as protecting our access to water. A friend of mine, Dean Cummings, and I were just kind of sitting around the table like we are right now and just kind of having conversations and kind of came up with this beautiful concept and was able to write it out, record it. And the biggest thing I think is really important about the water in the world is it, and you've heard me talk about relationships. I think, you know, water, we do drink it, which obviously we need to survive, You know, like, that's huge. But the ability that people are around skiing, kayaking, fishing, and the relationships that you build around water, not just by drinking it. In the music video, in the you know, I have all these different clips traveling around of the ocean, of rivers, of water running into sewers, into people drinking water, into people skiing, people kayaking. You know, the video will be fully submerged in... every scene's going to be water, you know, whether it's pollution of water. You know, it's like, it's universal.
Well, so. the water's always been very special. Everything about it, we spent time on the beach. We live right down the street from the beach. And, you know, just the other day, Carrie and I took both girls paddleboarding.
Whoa.
Put them awesome. Right on top of the paddleboard and, awesome. And we cruised out and went just right around the shoreline and... Both of them loved it. I'm doing my first 4-mile paddleboard race.
Wow. Cool.
In 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, awesome. In the beginning of April. It's called the Shark Bite Challenge.
Ooh,
yeah. Out. So I'm excited. And that is why I think I fell in love with H2O, because I've always loved the water. And anytime life gets stressful,
yeah,
I can always take myself right down the street to the beach and just breathe in that salt water and just forget about reality for a minute.
Yeah, it's nice to unwind. And you're a lucky guy that you live so close to the beach.
No, I don't take that for granted at all. Well, I want to share with your music. I'm going to add all the links in the podcast. Tell everybody, what is your favorite form of communication? Where can people reach out to you on?
Hugs. No, I'm just kidding. That's a bad joke. My as far as my social network stuff, it's my website is jkmusic.com. I would say it's like just kidding, but I'm Joel Cachel. I'm dead serious. So jkmusic.com. You can find me on Facebook. My name is Joel Cachel. Once again, my last name is like Rachel with K.
And, man, I just could not get that name down, folks.
Yeah. Well, if it's as far as spelling goes, you can spell it. It's Joel Cachel. So
sweet. Well, I appreciate your time, and I look forward to filming this video here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Episode 9 with Joel Cachel. If you like what you heard, simply go to the iTunes stores and subscribe to our podcast. Each time we release a new podcast, you'll get the latest one right on your desktop or your mobile. You can also follow us on Twitter at HoldThat77. If you guys have any feedback, comments, or suggestions for this podcast, you can reach me at cjsevents1@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.